This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
With us, Dr. John Dellatore, licensed psychologist, and we're talking about the ballerina that's accused of murdering her husband. She's saying it was in self-defense. Ashley Benefield is who we are talking about. 24-year-old ballerina model falls in love with a 54-year-old man who lost his wife 9 months prior. Doug Benefield got married within 2 weeks of meeting each other. Back in 2016, she became pregnant. It became chaotic relationship shortly thereafter with her business failing that he helped set up for her, and then very much on and off for the next several years. She's now accused of killing him, but she's using the stand your ground rule right now, saying that, you know, he was coming at me, I was trying to defend myself, and this is what happened. Let's go all the way back here prior to this even taking place. She did have some reports filed of domestic abuse, no charges ever being brought, but it does begin to show us somewhat of a pattern from what we can understand of abuse between Doug and Ashley.
Yeah, there was even some depositions that were being taken, and I don't remember the reason for the depositions, in which he admitted to firing a gun near her, mm-hmm. To threatening her with a gun, right? When we're thinking about someone who's in an abusive relationship similar to this. Now, again, we don't really know. I mean, we don't know what actually happened. And it is technically a he said, she said type of case. What we have to remember is that if any of that is accurate, and again, he admits to some of this stuff in a deposition. So, you know, you take an oath, right, to tell the truth, even in a deposition. So, she's lived a life in which aggressive behaviors are common and probably unexpected, right? That they occur at unexpected times. Mm-hmm. And so it can make someone jittery, and it can make someone believe that they need to walk on eggshells. And if she's trying to protect herself, I mean, she's trying to leave, right? Yes, he's there to help her move, which is, again, weird. But and I think it's part of the context that we find a lot of people have a misunderstanding when it comes to domestic and intimate partner violence. Why doesn't the person being abused just leave? Because you can't. Because it's not that simple. And in some ways, it's much more dangerous if you do leave. And here's a perfect example of that. Often we see the abusing person ends up killing the abused person. But it's also possible that the abused person, you know, finds that enough is enough at some point and finds that they're finally able to do something, that they're able to have agency. And so they end up killing the abuser. And so it's such a confusing relationship dynamic filled with coercion and manipulation and violence that it's not surprising that it happens so often and happens in times and in places that most people would think it shouldn't and are unexpected.
Very much so. The fact that he did admit to some of those things in a deposition is something that he did several years ago. I think anytime you're in a relationship and one of the partner pulls out a firearm and discharges it, whether it be at you or somewhere in the vicinity, that is going to stick with you. And you're going to now view any possible confrontation with that the other is capable of pulling one of those out and possibly using them, I would think, which I think almost leads to an even easier understanding of why maybe she had to do what she had to do. There's some arguments being made that in the past she had made an allegation of poisoning. The judge in that case told her that based on the story that it did not possess a scintilla of truth. Unfortunately, without more specific information or details, it's hard to fully put that into context as to why the judge said that or why he would think that, considering there had already been charges against or there had been accusations against Doug. Why are we looking at something where maybe there was a little bit back and forth of abuse on both sides or accusations on both sides that weren't always the truth? Or is this just a bad judge that is not believing a victim?
I'm going to go with the second one.
Yeah.
If I have to choose, I'm going to choose to believe that there are some, that there are some men who will never believe women.
Sure.
And this might be a case that one of those men was in a position of power and just didn't believe that something like this would happen. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that she lied about that thing? We live in a world of infinite possibilities. It's probabilities that are finite. And I think that could she have lied or could she have embellished? Sure. But I think it's more likely that he just didn't believe her.
Sure. Sure. And even if she was embellishing, there's another thought here that the difficulty of being taken seriously and looked at and actually heard. I can see some people, I've known people where, you know, you put the what should be shocking enough out there and for something to happen, nothing does. You feel like, well, maybe I'll have to add on to this, but the original goal is for someone to be held accountable for their previous actions of abuse. But sometimes maybe she felt the need to add into it to get the attention that she needed.
And that's certainly possible and certainly something that a lot of women have to deal with, this idea that they're never going to be believed. And what's worse is that the moment that they try to do something to get someone to believe them, that's the thing that society or whoever is going to hang their hat on and say, see, you lied.
Yeah.
So I can't believe anything that you say.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.